You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And the second half of the show is live, and we appreciate you dropping on by. Let's check in with Mike, who is up next in Texas. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Paul. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
A few days back, I was watching your show, and somebody called in, and they wanted to know the disparity between, I think it was Kentucky getting a $250,000 fine and A&M only getting $100,000. And you said you would check in on it. But the way I understand it is that somebody in the SEC headquarters keeps score, and it's $50,000 per event. Now, I don't know if it maxes out at $250,000 if you've got more than five times that you've been penalized, but that was the difference, because I know at A&M, that was their second egregious fault in rushing the field, once with that seven overtime with LSU, and then again with the Alabama game.
Yeah, I think you are correct about that. There is a scale, first offense, second offense. Yeah, I don't know what happens if you're like a five-time loser. I'm not sure what they do to you, but they make you stay after school, I guess.
Yeah. The one other observation, as watching the Tennessee-Ole Miss game, the people that really took the brunt of all that mischievous activity were the people on the ground floor, and they were Tennessee fans.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you're throwing a mustard bottle from whatever row you're in, unless you're Peyton Manning, you're probably not going to hit your target very well. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Floyd is up next. Go right ahead, Floyd.
Thank you, Paul, for taking my call. A gentleman called in a few minutes ago wanted an explanation as to why that TD that the defense scooped up and carried in was right. Called back. Well, I was watching the game, and the announcers talked to the head official that's in the stadium, and his explanation was that the two referees that took off following the guy that carried the ball in for a touchdown from defense, one of them should have made the call that the corral was stopped when he fumbled the ball.
Right.
And they didn't. One of the other referees did. And so we were lost the touchdown, but the reason we got the football was that it was fourth down.
Okay. That is a good explanation, and it's, I'm glad you shared that with us. Hey, take care of yourself. Bill is up next in Houston. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Very well.
I just wanted to get your opinion on this real quick. I'm kind of curious, and this is a poll question. You know, every year – at the beginning of the year, they usually take the big-name schools, the SEC schools, and they put them at the top of the polls. The season starts, and a lot of these schools lose. But the schools with the big names drop one or two, but the regular schools take a Cincinnati. If Cincinnati lose one game, they drop all the way out of the top 10. If Oregon beats Ohio State, Oregon drops down, but Ohio State stays close to the top. Now, you know, just looking at if the game is played on the field rather than somebody picking their favorite teams, I'm just trying to understand, how is it that you are truly getting a true champion if you're only picking the schools who you think – I mean, Alabama has been great for years. We know that. But anybody else in the SEC has been up and down and up and down. A&M has done no better in the SEC than they did in the Big 12. And so I'm trying to understand, how is it that they're really getting the best teams in there if they're only picking the teams that they think are the better teams?
Well, Bill, thanks for the call. Again, let me explain. The polls don't matter at all. They're beauty contests. What matters when it comes to picking the college football playoff is a 13-person committee that we will start talking about in 2 weeks quite a bit. And they evaluate every game. They get together every weekend starting in 2 weeks. And they come up with a list. So it has nothing to do with what happened in the past or the perception, whether we quibble with this group or not. And quite frankly, as much as I have criticized them, they have essentially gotten it right at the end of the year. Maybe not in the buildup, but they usually get it right toward the end. Let's continue with more phone calls. And Mitch is up next.
Hello, Uncle Paul. How are you today?
Well, Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing well. Can I make a quick observation before I ask you a question?
Sure.
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead, Mitch.
I think Jim needs to get his dentures reattached. They sound like they're slipping here recently. If you were a coach in college football, would you want to be an offensive or a defensive coordinator?
Well, this is a personal preference, but I've always preferred defense. So I would rather – I like trying to tackle you and knock your head off as opposed to be the recipient.
Well, I was wondering which side of the field you leaned on.
And am I – yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that's just a thought. That's just as a coach. I don't know. I mean, I think as a player, I'd probably rather be quarterback than a – because my height and weight fits that a little bit better than a defensive lineman.
Well, who knows? You might have bucked up a little bit more if you thought you was going to be a defensive lineman. But anyway, I was just curious about that question.
Hey, by the way, Mitch, good luck. Good luck Saturday against Pittsburgh.
I'm not playing. They are.
You're going to need it. Let's continue. Bob in Cincinnati. Hey, Bob, go right ahead.
Paul, you were a reporter before, a television personality, and I'm just curious, with all of the disparaging information that has come out on Ed Orgeron, where do you believe – is that coming from the athletic department, from alumni? Where do you think that comes from? I mean just curious.
I think it's a combination, but ultimately I think it comes from very high up. Now, I don't know specifically, but it reminds me a little bit of what I watched this weekend with what you see sometimes watching the news from Washington or the White House. And it just seemed like it was a concerted effort timed to coincide with a final decision being made. I know I'm being a little confusing here, but I found one of the articles that involved all the salacious details. The fact that it came out the way it did means that story was being worked on for a long time. And I'm sensing that some of the information, if not a large degree of it, came from high-ranking officials within that athletic department to help build their case. So they didn't have to say it. They had somebody else say it for them.
All right, thank you. Can I ask one other question?
Of course.
How many pair of glasses do you have?
Yeah, it's something that I've collected over the years. I don't really buy many anymore. I went through a phase where I would get a few a year, but I have finally calmed that phase down because I really don't see that well out of any of them.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a good question, by the way. The next memoir. We'll take a break. We want to make sure we save some time for our featured 5 o'clock guest on Thursday. He is Mike Griffith. And if you missed him on Friday, he may be replacing Dave Chappelle in the next Netflix special.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome back. Thursday afternoon. Georgia does not have a game, but we always want to check in with Mike Griffith. Mike, before we get to some major issues, and I'll talk about where you are in a minute, what Kirby Smart saying this afternoon that Stetson Bennett apparently is going to be joined by JT Daniels for the Florida game. What do we know about this, and will JT supplant him as the starter?
Yeah, hard to say who's going to start, Paul. I mean, JT came back to team drills on Tuesday, back into the 11-on-11, was able to throw without pain. And so that's a big step for JT after 3 weeks of being out with, you know, the strained lat muscle. So the fact that JT's getting it down the field, throwing pain-free, that's huge. And Kirby's played Stetson and JT together in games before. This isn't news to me. We saw this against South Carolina. We saw this against Vanderbilt. Of course, we'll see it against Florida. It's one more guy that Florida has to prepare for. JT, a very different kind of quarterback than Stetson, his ability to see the field, his ability to go downfield. And with JT under center, Georgia is a pass to set up the throw team. Stetson has to rely on the run game and the play action game, but he also brings more mobility to the table. He's a sneaky fast guy. 4.5 40 guy. So now all of a sudden Florida's got to prepare for two different quarterbacks, just like Georgia's got to prepare for two different quarterbacks at Florida.
Yeah, I'm sure Todd Grantham's happy to have more work to do, and that's where we're going next. I can't quite figure out where you are, but my sense is you're on a secret mission doing something nefarious about Dan Mullen's future at Florida. Can you tell us anything about that?
I'm trying to keep up with Kirby Smart's recruiting. He's flipping guys from Florida State. He's, you know, flipping guys from USC. He's getting all these 5 stars this week. Got an IMG kid, a big defensive lineman, this Barry Alexander. I'm going from one end of the coast to the other trying to keep up with Georgia recruiting, Paul. They're number one in recruiting, too, in the 2022 class.
Okay. That was what we call a non-answer.
Not buying it.
So let's get to Dan Mullen. You've been pretty critical of him, and now it seems like the Florida fans are following suit. Instead of criticizing you, they're angry, and they're particularly angry about the quarterback situation. I mean, they're angry about that than they are about Dan Mullen, who I think they still support and like. But overall, what, you know, your takeaway from last Saturday and what it means as we get ready for Florida a week from now?
Well, they scored 42 points with 4 interceptions. That's what it means to me. This is a team that still has a very high ceiling. This is a team that's averaging over 500 yards per game. Dan Mullen said something, and his critics are going to line up at it, but he said, you know, when we don't make mistakes, we're a pretty good team, something to that effect. And you got to take what he's saying there and really break it down. 15 penalties against Kentucky, Paul. That's an outlier. I mean, 15 penalties against Kentucky, 4 interceptions against LSU, a couple of bad play calls and a slow start against Alabama. It's not like this Florida team couldn't have won all their games. So here's what you're thinking. If you're Kirby Smart, you're thinking, you know what? This is going to be the game. They're going to put it together. They've got a bye week. Mullen can pull the trigger on this quarterback change now and put the more talented Richardson back there. I mean, this guy's dynamic. You're still going to get Emory Jones. We know he's a gamer. But if Florida puts it all together, eliminates the 15 penalties they had against Kentucky, you know, reduces the 4 interceptions they had against LSU to maybe 1, do they have enough offense to get to the back end of that Georgia defense? Because really, you look at who Georgia's played, and I'm not going to tell you they haven't played anybody. That would be an insult to Arkansas. That would be an insult to Clemson. But if you want to look offensively at who they played, there's only one pass team that ranks in the top 50, and that's the Auburn Tigers. And they don't have anybody that can catch the ball. They had to get a recruit. They had to get a transfer from Georgia that couldn't get on the field to be their number one. So if they had receivers, right, if Kentucky had more than one target, Florida's going to represent the first team that has enough skilled guys that can really challenge Georgia on the back end, provided they play clean football.
Yeah, that's a big if. So the conversation about Dan Mullen is interesting, Mike, and I think maybe next week we'll have a little better focus on it. But it does, you know, Buddy Martin was here yesterday or the other day essentially saying, I mean, this is the whole season for them. I don't think that's an understatement when it comes to perception. Whether Todd Grantham's around by next year seems like it's a fait accompli, but I am curious about your continuing assessment and analysis of Dan Mullen and what he really needs to do. You mentioned recruiting. That's not where it's at right now for him.
No, and that's been hard. Right now, though, let the folks dialing in on this game, Paul, think about this. Florida has a lot of motivation. This is immediate vindication. You beat Georgia, and all the bad stuff goes away. I mean, this is a great game for Florida to have on the schedule. The only thing that could make it better for Florida is if they were playing home and home and this was in the swamp. And this would be a home game for them, by the way. So it really hurts them that it's at a neutral site because they could really use the swamp right now to wreak havoc. Instead, it's going to be in that sterile NFL stadium where everybody, you know, talks about how the colors look before kickoff, and then you forget about it. But if we're going to talk about Mullen, Paul, we can't stop with Dan Mullen. And I'm not ready to say he should be fired. I was actually impressed with how he handled his press conference and how he handled the Florida media this week. He was very calm and poised, answered all the questions, didn't grow irritated. This sounds like a coach who has a plan, who still has confidence in his players. So I'm not ready to write off the Florida Gators yet. They can still have a great season and go 8-4 like they did last year. As far as the future of Dan Mullen, you got to talk with Scott Strickland about that because this is bigger than Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen isn't the one who gave himself an extension and a raise after he got a show cause. And Dan Mullen isn't the one managing an athletic department that had some serious off-field transgressions with the women's basketball program. This is a question about the entire Florida athletic department and the athletic director. That will be closely tied to Dan Mullen. So this game is bigger than just Dan Mullen and Georgia. We're talking about AD Scott Strickland, a guy that I love, you love. He's one of the most popular, intelligent guys that I know in the athletic administrative world. But he finds himself in a pickle right now.
Well, I have to follow that up before somebody misunderstands your point, which is what? What exactly are you saying about Scott Strickland other than, you know, he's got some things on his watch that a lot of athletic directors have on theirs?
Well, a lot of times coaches are tied to ADs, Paul, and that's something to watch here. I think Scott Strickland would be reluctant to make a coaching change. And I think that you have to look deeper at the raise that Dan Mullen got. Was it too much too soon? I still have questions about Jimbo Fisher. I know they're still celebrating Alabama like that meant something. And I guess, you know, it's a nice asterisk that Jimbo's the first guy to beat Nick Saban, but he still lost to Arkansas and Mississippi State at the end of the day. And that's still massive underachievement. Huge missed opportunity that A&M wasn't prepared earlier better so that they could have taken advantage of beating Alabama. But as it is, Alabama is back in the driver's seat. They're getting ready to mow Rocky Top. Just a heartbreaking loss for Tennessee. Going to be very difficult for those Tennessee players to get themselves up emotionally again and play in Tuscaloosa after what happened in Neyland Stadium last Saturday night. So Alabama's back in championship drive. Could they be a two-loss playoff team if they were to lose in the SEC championship game? I don't think so. But A&M right now has got to be kicking themselves over not being better prepared. They should be able to beat those teams they lost to, Paul, earlier in the year. I still think this is an underachieving season. They beat Alabama, but you're not going to get to cash in on it because of those terrible losses that they had.
Let me ask you about what happened in Knoxville. We're still talking about it. It's Thursday, Tennessee heading to Alabama tomorrow. Just from a distance, which, of course, we both were, what did you take away from Neyland Stadium, a place you used to cover and inhabit quite a bit?
Well, you know, just like a plane crash, it's never one thing. It's a cascade of events, and it started about 11 years ago when Lane Kiffin left the program in a lurch after dropping recruits like Bryce Petty and Taj Boyd, who went on to become legendary players at Clemson and Baylor. Kiffin stiff-armed him after Tennessee had him recruited his own guys with all sorts of troubled backgrounds, and left the program under an NCAA investigation in less than a year after a 7-6 season that some people conveniently try to remember as a good year. It wasn't. He lost games he shouldn't have. He had a coaching staff that committed numerous violations. This was all documented. All right. It's all old news. I don't know where it comes up in the Google search. So a lot of people just forget what a terrible job he did when he was in Knoxville. All right. Now, fast forward, Paul, the guy's trolling everybody on Twitter leading up to the game. Complete sophomoric behavior. I can't believe that an adult is going to act like this on Twitter, but it is Lane Kiffin, and there's special rules and exemptions for him, apparently. Then you have a game where Ole Miss guys, and I don't know, was every single one of them down and injured? I think there's room to speculate that there may have been some faking going on. I think you can speculate that. I can't prove that. But that's a frustrating thing for any college football fan to watch the other team have this number of injuries when your offense is getting going. Again, I can only speculate. I can't prove anything. I don't think anybody can. Hard to give Lane Kiffin the benefit of the doubt with his track record, though. And then you had a really tough call go against. There was just a lot of – now, again, that doesn't make what happened right. It was wrong. It should not happen. The people that threw things should be punished to the fullest. There needs to be an awareness now in the SEC that this can happen if you don't take proper steps. But in trying to explain why it happened, there is absolutely a trail of breadcrumbs that goes back to Lane Kiffin's infamous year in Knoxville.
Now, Mike, I'm always intrigued by your comments, and I always hate to try to interpret them, but sometimes you do leave an impression whether you intend to or not, and it just seems like if I'm extracting from what you just got through saying, you just criticized Lane Kiffin far more harshly than you did what happened in that stadium Saturday night. And I know you're going to say that's not what you meant, but that's exactly how I took it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you may have inferred that, Paul. I mean, I just tried to lay out the parts of the case that led up to the crime.
How can you blame Lane Kiffin and what he and Ed Ogeron did 11 years ago or didn't do? I don't even remember what happened. And John Adams, by the way, the sports editor of the Knoxville paper, was here a couple of nights ago saying he did a great job. I know you were you have a different opinion, but forget all that. How did Lane Kiffin light that fuse?
Well, I don't – again, Paul, there was a series of things that led up to it.
Well, I know all that. Everyone knows all that. I'm not talking about the first, I'm not talking about 2010. I'm talking about
because he provoked,
last weekend
he provoked,
at Neyland Stadium.
It's called social media, Paul, and it's one of the ills of our society when people misuse it. He provoked that fan base leading up to the game. He was the one that brought up all of those things that happened before. He's the one that makes light of his time there. I mean, we knew that there was going to be a lot of emotion in that stadium because of what happened that one year Lane took over. I mean, Tennessee went from a team that had played for an SEC championship, you know, less than a year before Philip Fulmer was fired, to a team that was under the cloud of NCAA probation, or excuse me, investigation for 2 or 3 years with sanctions that carried over into the next two coaching staffs. Now, I'm not saying that makes it right, but if you're trying to understand why a fan base would be that upset, you need to look at all the circumstance. Paul, you can't just look at the tornado. You've got to look at the weather condition. We got radar for this. Lane Kiffin was on the radar. Hurricane Lane was going to hit Neyland Stadium, and it was just a matter of what degree he was going to hit it with.
Okay, we'll leave it there because I mean we may have to extend you for 3 hours next week before the the Florida Georgia game. Mike, be careful because I see some weather behind you. I don't want you to get blown away on the beach there. So you you be careful. Come back next week. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, Paul.
Hurricane Lane. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I feel like I'm watching one of the political channels right now with some of those accusations. We are coming back. By the way, Lane Kiffin will be on tomorrow afternoon live from the Grove. We'll see if he has any response to Mike Griffith.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, how about this lineup on Saturday? We start with Pine Bluff and Arkansas. We just heard Coach talk about that. Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. That's a tricky game for the Bulldogs. Prime time from Kyle Field, Carolina, and the Aggies. And we welcome you back, William, in Maryville. I need some sanity here, William. How are you?
Well, Paul, excuse me. I'm sorry. I may not give you sanity. I am. You know, I thought Mike Griffith made some good points. I don't think they validate what happened, and I'm not going to defend what happened. But let's drill down on it a minute. You know, that guy Buck from Kentucky was his thing. Well, outrage was angry. Nauseating. Yeah, angry. Well, let's look at it, though. Let's assume for a minute that 100 people threw things on the field. That's less than 0.1% of the people that were there. And let me give you a hypothetical, Paul. Let's pick the Paul Feinbaum charity, and you have a rally for your charity, and 10 or 15 people at that rally break the law. They get into fights, and they damage property.
Sure.
Unless you have encouraged their behavior, you're not responsible. And in this case, the cheerleaders didn't yell out, throw stuff on the field. The Jumbotron didn't say, throw stuff on the field. The announcer didn't say, throw stuff on the field. Probably 100 or fewer or more, I don't know the exact number, people broke the law. Now, what's not been said either on your show or on the national media is I believe 18 people have been arrested, including one that was arrested 30 miles from the stadium, and they're going to be prosecuted.
Was he tossing a mustard bottle 30 miles away, or did he just get away?
No, a police officer saw him and either got his license because he fled, and he fled to Blount County, and the sheriff picked him up. Okay? So let me make a suggestion.
Okay.
Why doesn't – because the UT police don't have – unlimited resources. Why doesn't the chancellor and the president appoint a task force, retired lawyers, retired judges, retired law enforcement, to investigate this? First thing they do is they say, if you turn yourself in, if you threw something and you turn yourself in, here's going to be your punishment. A fine, deferred prosecution, community service, potentially probation at the university, probation from coming to the stadium. But after a certain period of time, you keep your nose clean, and it's going to be expunged. If you do not turn yourself in, we are going to scour the cameras, credit card purchases for seat assignments. We're going to interview people and scour cell phone coverage. And if we can catch you, we're going to prosecute you, and you may go to jail. The people that did it need to be held accountable. You know, Paul, I can remember going to Raiders games at the Coliseum in the 80s and there being fights in the stands. I remember the Dodgers game where some fan was attacked and almost killed. I think a 49ers game. I mean, I'm surprised that there weren't more incidents than I've heard of any where, you know, fans got into physical altercations where somebody really got seriously injured. The people who did this need to be held accountable, but this castigation of the University of Tennessee fan base is unfair, it's unfounded, and, you know, it's not supported by the law. And, you know, I haven't called in a long time, but after Buck, and you know, I just had to call in, Paul, because hold the people responsible, you know, but you don't throw the whole university under the bus.
William, thank you very much. We have a response to that from Jim.
That was a very good call from Lawyer William. You know, he and I weren't on good terms, but that was good. That was really good. And you know what, Paul, here's the thing. Here's the whole point. If there's going to be prosecution, which he said, and if it's going to be guys 30 miles away and as many as they can find that were throwing that stuff, then that's good, and nobody has a beef with that. Nobody, because that's all that was supposed to be done, to, you know, about this. And obviously, people thought there was nothing going to be done, and the response from the university didn't seem to be energetic, you know, about what you. Anyway, William made a good point there. I hope it's true. What do you think?
Yeah, well, Jim, the only thing I think that really needs to be done, and we don't need rhetoric, we don't need accusations, we need the university and the police department to do their job. I'm perfectly content with seeing people prosecuted for their belligerent behavior.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what America's supposed to be all about. You know, is supporting protecting the citizens,
and by the way,
which our own president not doing now.
I would take exception with my friend William. I'm not for telling people, you know, you turn yourself in and, you know, we'll give you a lesser sentence. I'm for prosecuting to the full extent of the law. I don't want to babysit anybody.
Yeah, I didn't hear. I agree with you. I didn't hear William say that. And if he did, I agree with you. I mean, no compromise.
I mean,
that's what you're saying,
Jim,
right?
This isn't, you know, the public library saying, well, if you have an overdue, if you have the Catcher in the Rye from 1975, well, you know, bring it in and we won't fine you. If you threw a whiskey bottle, if you threw a golf ball, or if you threw a mustard bottle, we ought to be coming after you right now.
So, this is the fine bomb I used to like and love and know and agree with. Thank you for coming back, Paul. That's great. You're exactly right.
Thank you for bringing me back.
I didn't know William said that. I didn't hear him say that.
Yeah,
huh?
Well, he did. I mean, he was trying to be, you know, he's trying to be a lawyer, trying to, you know, incentivize criminals for coming in and waiving any punitive penalty. I'm for throwing the book at them. Let's take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Mitch, are you there?
Yes.
Well, good.
Yes,
good. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me, Paul. Your previous test is a little liberal, it seems. Sounds like he wants to go ahead and torch Lane Kiffin for something that he had nothing to do with.
Yeah. Lane Kiffin was having fun on social media. He was not inciting a riot.
And to be honest, I'm a disabled veteran. I'm a owner-operator of my own trucking business. And You know, I believe that freedom of speech is key in America, and social media and faces of, you know, social media have way too much power right now over freedom of speech. That's not really why I called. But
yeah, by the way, Mitch, I agree with you as somebody who grew up in the journalism business. I do not like to see anyone's freedom of speech infringed upon.
Right, and truly so. You know, I mean, that this Tennessee issue with the fans littering the field. Look, it wasn't right, but you know, do I want to treat them with the same hostility I would treat somebody that burned a building down in you know, Seattle, Washington? Or you know, somebody that burned a business down, for that matter, that really aren't getting any prosecution at all. You know, enough said there. The primary reason I called was I'm from Watkinsville, Georgia. I'm a Georgia fan, and I also like to give a shout out to the quarterback for South Carolina. For doing such a great job, even though I'm not a Carolina fan, in that 2-minute drill at the end of the game.
No, so, he did fabulous. A fantastic job. Well, Mitch, thank you for the call, and I'll join many who have already told you that we deeply appreciate and are indebted to you for your service. Thank you very, very much. Larry, we're indebted to Larry, too. I don't know what for what, but just for bringing us laughter.
Well, you think I deserve all that?
Well, by the way, we are indebted to you for your service, too, to this country and to law enforcement.
By golly, thank you, Paul Feinbaum. That gives me dang goosebumps, brother. You may not think I appreciate it, but I really do. You know, after I come home, serving a year over there, being a little kid, and come home, getting spit on, things thrown at, finally, we get some justice and get some people that appreciated us. And I thank you, man.
Well, Larry, I missed that. I was too young to go over there, and I didn't understand it at the time. But I've come to understand it through people like you, because we had a conversation about that one time, and it really it was chilling to me what you and, you know, so many other people went through, and probably are still haunted by today.
Yeah, I lost three of my high school friends, man. I mean, this ain't something just a golf ball throw on the football field. I mean, this ain't something that's just insurrectionist at the Capitol. This was for real. Yeah, and it's hard to deal with when you lose people like that you grew up with and went to school and loved, and then you see people that just didn't appreciate it. But I'm hoping it changes. It's like these soldiers now coming back from Afghanistan. They're not getting appreciated. You know, they're going to blame them for something. It's their fault. But this thing about the football field, if they hurt somebody, hit somebody in the head, that's the one they need to go after. And I don't think, in my honest opinion, that cannot happen. And just for a $250,000 fine, that's not enough. I mean, they need to do some serious stuff, but it's going to be, the can's going to be kicked down the road, and you know that, Paul. They're going to act like they're doing something. And that's not really. Do you believe that, really?
No, I frankly expected more. I think it was a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing.
Yeah, you always got a good way of saying something, Feinbaum.
Well, by the way, Larry, I wish what I just got through saying had been original, but William Shakespeare beat me to it.
Oh, man, you ripped it from Shakespeare. Oh, man.
I mean, listen, if you're going to rip somebody off, at least rip off the Bard, okay? I mean, don't rip off some... Yeah. Local yokel newspaper columnist in Birmingham like I was.
Yeah, I remember my old man, I used to get down at the Waffle House on First Avenue North, and I'll argue and cuss you about your article and how bad it was. Oh, it was like a mini Paul Feinbaum camp, you know. They was in there slinging stuff and cussing. But, yeah, you've been around long enough, brother. You know the rope, Jack.
Hey, well, Larry, great to talk to you again. We'll hopefully talk to you tomorrow when we are live at the Grove. A couple of bottles of whiskey has been tossed down on that coveted land. We will take a break. We have a couple of basketball guests in the final hour, including two of the best players in the SEC and the head coach at Missouri, straight ahead.